Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the 15th. We're halfway through the month.
Oh my gosh, isn't that great? Wait, is this a, this isn't like the solstice or something, is it? Or is it half?
No.
That doesn't come in. When's that coming?
I have no idea what it is.
I know that the, I think the, you change your clocks like November 1st or 2nd. It's coming up. It's getting dark out early. Or it's getting dark out. It's in the morning, it's darker than it was.
It's bad.
Mm-hmm. And a happy New Year. Happy Rosh Hashanah. The high holidays all of us.
I should be saying that to you.
Thank you. It was an uneventful holiday this year.
What was it supposed to be?
I don't know. The family gets together, has dinner. I made, my sister, why don't you cook something this year? I said, okay, I could do something. So I made, I roasted Brussels sprouts on the grill, and I made an eggplant like ratatouille to go with the other stuff.
Somebody else recently made ratatouille. I think my daughter.
Eggplants are tough. It's either you like them or you don't like them.
Eggplants I love.
You do.
They're delicious.
Yeah.
I with eggplants, I've given up on cooking them, though. I've decided to just, if you have a pressure cooker.
Oh, yeah.
Just cooks them up in 20 minutes or dynamite.
Like a crock pot or a pressure?
And they're not all greasy. No, a pressure cooker.
Oh. That's
you know what a pressure cooker is?
Yeah. Where you snap the sides down and it heats up and it keeps all the steam in there and all the heat in there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what's going on. There's a lot that's happening these days. Big week for markets coming up. At least that's what the general media out there would like you to believe. CNBC has a countdown clock for when the Fed is going to meet and release their latest information and their decision on the rates.
Okay.
It's kind of like they've made it so, you know, minute by minute, watch everything. I feel like I'm watching a financial version of the OJ trial. How great was that, by the way?
What, the OJ trial?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was captivating. So I guess what did Johnny Cochran say? He said, if the glove don't fit, you got to quit.
Yeah, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah, so I'm waiting for somebody to say, if inflation stays, you got to raise. Somebody's got to come up with something. But we have this coming up. Now, the big issue is that we're seeing that unemployment's at 5.1%, seeing that the inflation rate is not really rising or anything, but I'll give you a range, 1.6 to 1.8%, depending on how you look at it. You have manufacturing slowing a bit, consumer confidence plunging last month. You have the global situation, commodity rout. You have the slowdown in China, as well as the lack of any inflation and deflationary pressures throughout the world. You have productivity slowing down a bit and select area manufacturing surveys not doing well. But you do have some good things. I mean, there's some better things, a little bit of wage growth and all that. Now, the Fed was looking for a 5.1% unemployment rate, according to their metrics, and a 2% inflation target. So the big question is, when you wrap all that information into a big, nice, tidy package, the question then becomes, what are they going to do? What's your opinion?
I don't think they're going to do anything.
And is that because they're just so fearful? Or they're unable to, and they just don't know how to do anything else but sit pat?
I think they know the truth.
Which is?
That they can't do it. If they do something, the economy's going to tank.
So they'll do nothing. Now, they've been telegraphing for a number of months that they're kind of at the point where they have to do this liftoff. You know, they come up with all these terms, liftoff, which is the initial rate increase or tightening measure. But
yes,
if they did so, they would do it very, very gradually.
Right.
You know?
But they don't have to start now.
They don't have to start now. I came up with a solution. Because let's go through this. The current rate the Fed funds rate is, they call it a zero interest rate policy, or ZIRP for short. It's 0 to 0.25%. Now, I don't know who gets the zero and who gets the 2.25% when they borrow money and all, but they have this crazy range, which I never really understood. So if they were to raise, usually they go in 25 basis points or quarter point increments. The question is, what would they do? Would they go to 50 basis points?
No.
No. So would they
no
go?
No way.
So, but what would, if they were to raise, what would they do? So I'm thinking, well, they could do one of two things to pacify markets and make it look like a raise, but not really be a raise. And that is either one, say, instead of going from a 0 to 0.25% rate, we're going to do 0.25% is the rate. No range. That's kind of not a really a change.
That would be very creative.
Creative. I have one more creative that's really good. So instead of doing that, say, well, currently we're at 0 to 0.25%. We're going to split it in the middle and go 0.125%. So we did raise the lower end, but we did drop it as well. Which one?
Everybody.
That'd be pretty funny.
This has been discussed on most of those shows, Fast Money and the Closing Bell and all the rest of them, and the Fox shows. And everybody agrees that this would not be a good idea, what you just described.
Any of those things, right.
To do anything at the 0.125 thing.
Right.
It just looks wimpy. What's the point?
Right. I would tend to agree. But I think they're going to be creative. We'll see what happens. And we'll note that the potential for no change could send a real negative message to markets, right? Because no change means, hey, we've been saying we're going to get to this point. We're saying, right? This is
the problem with my, this is the reverse logic. This is probably the only problem with my argument.
Right, because then all of a sudden you're like, what the hell's wrong? But I thought everything was okay. I thought markets were okay. I thought the economy was okay. I thought that, you know, we're getting, right. Why all of a sudden are we not raising rates? Is there something worse in China that we're not aware of? Is there something underlying the economy that, oh my gosh, the outlook is really poor? On the other hand, if they raise, and maybe there's going to be the market commentary that, hey, they raised in a time, as you said, in a time when they shouldn't have. Oh my God, this is really going to slow down the economy, because we're seeing some hints of that already. They're backed into a corner. They have a real problem here.
I like your idea of eliminating the zero.
Yeah, that's a good one, right?
Yeah, that's the only solution. That your solution is the only solution I can think of.
Yeah, I would think that would provide kind of a, okay, we're raising, but we're not raising.
Right, it would be baffling.
Yeah.
It would be baffling enough that people would, they wouldn't affect the market adversely. I don't think it would boost it either.
I think the markets would just stop for a moment. Yeah. Everybody would just stop. What just happened?
Here comes the analysts.
Anyway, so that's going to be on Thursday in the afternoon. And of course, they'll have a press conference after. So market volatility will be pretty interesting in terms of whatever direction it takes. Now, one of the things I've noticed in these kinds of meetings, especially these big meetings, is that usually the first move of the markets, first couple of minutes, is the wrong move. Somehow it just manages to
consistently?
It seems to be. Huh. I don't think there's any. I'm sure that if I was to do an analysis of it, it would not hold water.
You might be wrong.
Maybe.
Because that would be very cool if you ended up with discovering something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, usually the masses are, don't forget, what happens is that in the first few minutes, all those that loaded up in one direction or the other as a bet on what was going to happen unload their position. Right? So if I bet short and all of a sudden the market moves against me, I say, okay, I'm out of this. So it's a big move. That's why you see that volatility right afterwards. Then you get cooler heads, longer-term investors playing whatever trend happens. So, now you tweeted which you got a lot of what I thought was for what it was. I thought you got a lot of retweets on a commentary of the real unemployment rate. Just
right
yesterday.
Yeah, I every so often I grab the shadow stats chart. And I just tweeted as an image.
But I thought that, and by the way, you can follow John at The Real Dvorak over on Twitter. But I thought that was interesting how many retweets you got of that. Didn't you think?
Yeah, I got quite a few.
I was kind of, so anyway, I put the chart and I attached a chart here. I thought we'd go through that and you can explain why maybe people thought this was of interest or why you thought of it was interesting.
Well, this is the standard shadow stats, unemployment, U3, U6, and shadow stats calculations that have been running for years. And they were always in parallel with the U3 being the one, the official one. I believe that's the right one. I don't have it in front of me.
That's correct. It's right. It's attached.
And then the U6 is sitting there above it, about a point or point and a half, something like that. And then the shadow stats one, which is the way the calculation for unemployment, some people say this isn't the case, but here's the way I understand it. The shadow stats numbers are the way they would have been calculated in the 30s, in the olden days. That's how the way they calculate people. In other words, they didn't throw out a lot of people in the current models that are unemployed, but they don't count. They don't count. They're not unemployed. They don't count because they refuse to take part in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So there was always pretty much that's the same three, and they ran very parallel, which is different. It's just, variations on the same baseline. And then in 2009, when Obama got in, this is what's always interested me. The number started going down for the U3 and the U6 in parallel, although the discrepancy between the U3 and the U6 now is huge. It's a big discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
But they're parallel. They kind of spread apart around right after Obama got in, and then now they've both been going down, down, down in parallel with a big spread. The shadow stats number, which had traditionally been in parallel with the other two, had never gone down. It started going up in 2009
yep.
and kind of plateaued around 2013 and has stayed steady at about 23.2%, something 23.5, something in there, that range of unemployment. And that would represent if the unemployment was calculated the way it used to be calculated in the 30s and 40s, that's what the unemployment rate really is. And so I tweeted this, which I do it every month or so. And for some reason, this one really caught on because I think people are really aware of this. Not so much in California and some of these hot spots where everyone's getting a job pretty easily, but in most of the country, if you're not in Silicon Valley or some business area that happens to be popping, you don't see that 5% unemployment. It's bull crap.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess this goes to the point that if you don't like the statistical output, change the inputs.
Yeah, which is what has been happening.
Yep. Well, we'll see what happens. Do you have any other thoughts on the rate increase?
Well, since we're in the middle of a depression, I still see this as a depression.
Really?
Yeah. And that's so I don't see anything changing at all until 2019.
Well, things have gotten a lot better than they were.
Well, if you say so.
There's more cars being sold. I'm not just talking about simply the markets. I'm talking about...
I'm not saying it's the Great Depression. It's not like the 30s. They've done a really good job of keeping it, keeping things going by printing money.
Yeah.
So everybody's happy. You're happy. I'm happy. We're doing okay. But it's just, if we're going to be honest about it, it's a depression. It just so happens to be a pretty mild one.
Speaking about changing the, if you don't like the result, change the inputs. So I caught a moment of CNBC this morning. Steve Leisman was coming on talking about the retail sales. And the retail sales number came out, let's just say it came out at 0.2% increase over last month. 0.2, which is not a big number, okay? But he said, but what you don't realize, if you adjust this for inflation, because a lot of things have come down in price.
Yeah.
People are really spending money. I'm thinking to myself. So he said, if you inflation adjust the retail sales, I'm thinking to myself, let me understand something.
Wow.
Retail sales is a calculation of the amount of money spent on goods, right? I mean, that's pretty simply, right? How does the amount of money change if the goods are cheaper? If I could buy more goods, so if I could buy 10 widgets with a dollar, now I could buy 20 widgets with a dollar, does that mean that sales have gone up? No, because it's the same dollar. It's the same amount of money being spent. That's what we're calculating. That's what we're looking at. How much money people are spending, not how many paper clips they're buying, if they're buying 10 or a million.
So what he's trying to do is, this is another good, this is another guy twisting the numbers.
Yeah, so I didn't get it.
So instead of basing the retail sales on the dollar I spend, you base it on the number of items I buy compared to on a year-to-year basis.
Well, in theory, because he's inflation adjusting it. So what he's doing is he's saying that if you bring inflation in because the cost is less for goods, you're spending more. I'm not following this, by the way, but that's pretty much what he's saying. Because the prices of things are lower, people are spending the amount, same amount of money. Therefore, they're really buying a lot of things.
They get more bang for their buck.
Yeah. So I don't understand. So if
so that means things are up.
If SanDisk sells a card, a memory card, a let's just call it 1 gig, just for the argument, a 1 gig memory card for $50. And then fast forward, they're selling a 5 gig card for $50. Does that mean people bought five more? So when you look at their earnings are better if it's still $50, all things being equal?
Yeah.
That's stupid, right?
It is stupid. But it does take into account, the thing that was always interested me about the technology world is that it's in a permanent deflationary state.
Yeah, well, Moore's Law, of course.
And so because it's in a permanent deflationary state, it's always, which is the worst thing in the world for a company, because you just wait and then you get more for your money.
Right.
So you stop buying. That's why people hate deflation or the whole economy going that way. But if they've managed to make it work, somehow the chip companies, the tech companies, the computer manufacturers, the hard disk drive companies, everybody, the monitor makers, everybody has managed to make a deflationary economy work. It's only a subset of the bigger economy, but it does work. And I've been always baffled by how does it work? You know, it does work, but it doesn't. If I need to buy a computer, I generally don't wait for the next generation. Right. I have been doing that, though, I have to say, with flat panel TVs. I want to buy a flat panel TV for my house in Washington State. Mm-hmm. I have a big set, but it's an old-fashioned one, big giant thing. DLP. But I want to get a nice flat panel, but I know that every time I go to Costco to look at flat panels wherever I go, they have new features. Now everything's 4K, about the same price as it used to be for 1080p. And it's just, and now I know there's going to be some other stuff coming up. They haven't talked about it too much, but they're going to start doing HDR, high dynamic range television sets. And they haven't even talked about that with the public at large, but those are going to be another move, another change. Like 4K, so I will. I've been waiting, so I'm acting like a bad person.
Have you seen these the Samsung Curve televisions?
Yeah, the Curve ones.
Ooh, they're beautiful.
Yeah, they're very pretty. I think the Curve's a gimmick, though. I don't see what the point. Maybe,
but aside from the Curve, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
But that brings us to Hewlett-Packard, who just tonight announced that they're going to be letting go another 25,000 to 30,000 employees from its enterprise unit and looking to reduce costs by about $2.7 billion. And this is, you know, they're doing this whole restructuring and spinning off part of it. And you look at Hewlett-Packard. First of all, tell me, and maybe I'm missing something. Do you recall in the last, I don't know, while, any significant innovation from this company at all?
HP. No, I can't think of a thing.
Nothing. It's kind of like Xerox.
Well, they may have been innovating left and right, but they obviously have not been promoting whatever the innovation was. I mean, even their printers, they seem to have just given up the ghost. Oh, let Epson have the market.
I mean, I like HP printers for the office. They're workhorses. You know, whether it's the laser printers or the desk jets. The desk jets are great. They last forever. If you buy the XL ink, they last forever too. I mean, they don't run out that easily. But they're going to be losing about 30,000 jobs. And this is on top of 55,000 workers that they laid off in the restructuring that began in 2012. And after this news was announced, and they came up with some other numbers about their outward-looking guidance for earnings, the stock was down 2.75%, which is very unusual when you start laying off all these people. Usually that's a good thing. But I think there's a lot of people onto the game that, hey, man, maybe there's something a lot worse here with this company. So after hours, Hewlett Packard was down about 2.75% when at the same time, Microsoft increased their dividend again.
Oh, so I missed that.
Yep. About, I think a 5 or 6 cent increase. Now, it wouldn't be a good show if we didn't discuss Apple after their recent conference. Did you watch that conference?
I did.
Mm-hmm. And what was your overall impression?
It was boring.
Boring. Like snoozing boring, right?
It was pretty bad.
They start out with the Apple Watch. There was some cool stuff with the healthcare integrations, I thought.
That was boring, really boring. I thought that was more boring than the rest of it.
Really?
Yeah, because who cares? I mean, I'm not going to buy any of these products for healthcare.
Well, right, but it was kind of interesting to see what the potential was from a technology standpoint, interaction with doctors, you know, all that good stuff. And of course, they had to do all the
kinds of demos are what they are. They're demos.
Yep. Then they had the Apple TV. The remote was interesting because the remote on the Apple TV currently, I like my Apple TV. The current remote on the Apple TV these days is just a little round circle and a couple buttons. It doesn't do much. This has a little swiping thing with the glass sensor. If I'm not mistaken, the new Apple TV has storage because they said something about price points depending on the amount of storage you have. I'm thinking, what are you storing? Because the Apple TV currently is all cloud. So it wasn't the whole thing to go to cloud and for them to control the cloud and all this cloud. And all of a sudden they have storage.
Well, cloud's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah. Then they announced the iPad Pro. This is about a 13-inch device, 12.8 diagonal, right? You know, more powerful. It has the pressure-sensitive screen or the 3D touch or whatever they call it now. What did you think of this iPad Pro?
I think if you're an artist and you like to sketch on these things, maybe it'd be okay. I don't know. It didn't do anything for me. I mean, I'm not buying one.
The price points were very high.
The price point was very high. It was $1,000 when all is said and done.
What I don't understand is if you're making a 13-inch screen with all this touch capability, why not just take your MacBook Pro and add touch capability to that? And make it one of those like 3-in-1s where they fold over. Because they also announced at the same time a keyboard that goes with it, right?
Right. So it looks just like a Surface.
Just like a Surface. Like
I was listening to some pundits, some one of these shows where these guys were talking about that. And there were Apple guys. Apple, I call them Apple denialists, big Apple fans.
Mm-hmm.
No, it didn't look anything like a Surface. That's bull crap. It's nothing like a Surface. Oh, it just looks like a Surface.
Totally looked like a Surface. When they rolled it out and it kind of opened up, I'm like, oh, that looks like just like the Surface. But I don't understand why they are resistant to putting touch on their other devices. Because is it because they're afraid of the cannibalizing? I mean, if you have a 13-inch device already, why not just and you're making a new 13-inch device? Yes, it's a little thicker and all that. I get it, but why not just put it on your MacBook Pro? Then you got everything.
I don't know. I have no idea. I'm guessing they're going to roll that out next year. They can't not roll it out. And the iMac has to have touch.
Now, what did you think of the pen stylus thingy?
It seemed like a pretty expensive pen.
$99.
Yeah.
It has a little thing that, you know, the end pops off so you can plug it into your USB or maybe the Thunderbolt lightning charger, whatever it was. So
yeah, that'll get lost.
The top is going to get lost, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
If you go back to 2007, there was a couple of interviews. I think it was 2007 or 2008. A couple of interviews by Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And I gave you this video here. And essentially, I'm just tell you what it says. It says, why would anybody want to use a stylus? That's ridiculous. Use your fingers. We're not going to use a stylus. Forget the stylus. Throw that out. Other companies basically will do. That's crap. The second thing that he says somewhere was, in some interview was, if you have multitasking or multitasking is ever mentioned, they just blew it. And that was two things that were announced. The multitasking, which I think the new iOS is coming out tomorrow, by the way. And a stylus. Kind of going against the original. I mean, you know.
Going against the god.
Yep, exactly.
At your own risk.
Yep. Some more things are happening in Techville. Supposedly, Mark Zuckerberg was giving a discussion today about a variety of different things with Facebook. He's the CEO, for those that don't know. And I guess they're experimenting with a dislike button that would allow you to dislike a post or information that was posted.
Yeah, thumbs up, thumbs down. Welcome to Dig.
Whatever happened to Dig? Are they still around?
I have no idea.
Dig. I remember the two guys that were the diggers, just like slouching on the couch all the time.
Oh yeah, well, yeah.
Drinking beers.
That's Dignation, yeah.
But they're gonna have a dislike option now. Of course, because we live in a world that we can't say anything mean. I guess we won't have a dislike button for people.
That's the only place it would pay off.
Yeah, I would have, you know, how it has like in Facebook, you look at all right, the photos and timeline, friends. I would have like people I don't like. Another tab. How great would that be?
It's kind of what Google Plus does.
Does it?
Well, I mean, you can create, you have to create your own categories, but you can categorize. I did this. Categories a bunch of people you don't like that you want in your circle, but you don't like them, and you just have it's just a circle of a-holes is the way I have it. And every once in a while you can look them up in case, because sometimes there's so many of them you can't remember them all, so you have to go back and look at your a-hole list. Oh, yeah, there's that guy. That's right, he's an a-hole. What am I even talking to him for?
You know, if you think about it for a second, if this whole like button or this thumbs up button or, you know, I'm interested in this discussion doesn't accompany the opposite, what good is it? Seriously. I mean, if you can only have, oh, I like this, you know, 1,000 people like it. By the way, just for the record, you can buy likes.
Yeah. So you can buy followers on Twitter.
Hey, I have a question about Twitter. I'm pretty sure I did not follow this person and somebody all of a sudden I'm following.
Yep.
What is that?
That's some scam going on inside the Twitter offices. I don't know. I think you can pay them, and the next thing you know is you end up following them, even though you never really agreed to follow them. And then when you see them that you followed them, you can just you can eliminate them. What I do, because I've seen it too. It's happened to me. So you're looking at your regular notifications, and you see some idiot. You know, usually a celebrity of some sort saying something stupid, a plug in their movie, and you look at it and then you just assume that somebody retweeted this. And then you see there's no retweet. And then you realize, and then you go check, you link on them, two things happen. One, you're suddenly following them mysteriously, mm-hmm. So you have to turn that off. Or two, you're not following them at all, which happens more often than not. Why is it there?
This person is Daniel Tosh, who I guess is
the comic.
The comic. Okay. I only follow one comic, and that's Seth MacFarlane.
Okay, I follow him too.
Daniel Tosh said in his tweet, "Big announcement. Gonna have some egg salad today for lunch. 1 of 32," which I'm not sure if that means I don't know what that means. 407 retweets.
Okay.
People are really retweeting that? Okay.
I'm not. Yep. Did you, it's probably not true. Did you check his thing to see if you were following him?
It says I'm following it.
Oh, yeah. Well, unfollow him.
Unfollowing right now. Unfollow. I'm unfollowing. 18 million followers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a scam. There's no way. I can name numerous celebrities. Shatner hasn't got 18 million followers. When you have, that's a Britney Spears and above level of celebrity where you could possibly get 18 million followers. Daniel Tosh, who does just a is not, no, it's not possible.
Need to go buy some dill pickle spears. 294 retweets. Makes no sense.
Well, he's obviously, I don't know what this, what the deal is, how you do that. They don't advertise it. I suppose that the marketing, the various public relations operations know about some of this stuff. I'm sure there's plenty of deals you can do. And somehow he's been auto-followed by some mechanism. I have no idea what it is. It's perhaps there's some other scheme afoot. But I don't see him having that many followers.
I'm reporting him now.
Report. You should, report.
Of course, the report issue won't come up. Stuck in a loop.
Oh, that's funny.
The whole thing's a scam, isn't it?
I think all of Twitter is.
That's
why when they don't want to use the term, but at the end of the day, somewhere down the road, in some near future, when the whole thing collapses, one of the top shorts.
It is the top shorts. Under it. Oh, here we go. I'm not. It's spam. It's spam. It's abusive of harmful, or I'm not interested.
No, abusive and harmful. Use that.
There we go. I got that. Includes private information, harassment.
You're allergic to eggs. You can't take a chance.
This person might be contemplating suicide or self-harm.
I forgot that's on there.
Involves harassment or violence. Includes private information. Includes an unauthorized photo of me.
No, it would be. No, you can't.
Harassment.
Yeah, harassment. It's harassment.
Who is he targeting? Someone else. What is he targeting? Engagement in targeted, threatening violence, being disrespectful. Block
that
him.
Being disrespectful.
Yeah, the pickles. All right, he's blocked. Bastard. Okay. Hey, what's going on with the wildfires? They're not too far from you, are they?
They're pretty far from me. They're about, take me about 90 minutes to get up there, I think. No, maybe not. I could probably get up there in 45. I could probably get up there in less than an hour. Now,
if you can get up there in an hour, how fast can the fires get to you?
Oh, they can't get to me.
No?
No.
Oh, good.
It's not possible.
They look terrible. I mean, like 500 or 600 houses.
Did you see that video of the guy driving through to trying to escape, and he's driving on this road, and there's just fires everywhere around him on the left of him, on the right of him, up ahead. And if there was something that fell on the road, he'd be done. It's the most horrendous video.
Was he taking the video?
I tweeted it.
Who took the video?
It's the guy. He had his phone and he held it up as he's trying to drive out of there. I'll send you a copy.
I got to see that.
You can actually look it up. Man driving through fire video, Lake County or whatever they call it, whatever county it is. Lake County. Wow. Even though I get the wrong county in my tweet, I said something else, but it's Lake County. It is the most frightening video. I'm telling you, you watch this video and you go, my God. And then he passed a poor car on the side of the road. I don't know if that guy got out or somebody else picked him up or whatever, but he's dead. Mm. And you just have to see this video because you're driving down a highway as fast as you can. Somebody else was talking about this. They have to go at least 60 miles an hour. Your tires melt.
Oh, yeah.
So you're driving. He's driving as fast as he can down this road, and on both sides of him is nothing but fire. Mm.
I didn't understand something. There was some woman on saying, oh, you know, she said, we had to leave in a hurry. We couldn't take anything. The house was starting, you know, we couldn't even take our pets. I'm thinking, can't take your pet? What is that? Why can't you take a pet? I mean, I understand you don't want to maybe take your china. Or the chandeliers you can't get out of the house.
Maybe the pet was running around the yard. It's kind of a wild and woolly area. Mm. I don't know. I don't know how that happened, but it did. Apparently, this fire came down so fast. It's all dry up there. And there's no fire breaks. It's a very poorly managed area. Mm. And it just whooshed down, and it just started catching everything on fire so quick. Even when you're trying to escape it, you got to see this video.
I'm looking for it.
It's a winner.
I wanted to just back up and just talk about and mention again how awful the Chinese markets are doing. First of all, their economy continues to slow. Every piece of data out of there is slowing. Of course, today on CNBC, they were saying, you know what? We can't believe Chinese data. And truthfully, you know what? Maybe it's a lot better than they're saying.
That's CNBC? Yeah, that would be them. And nice try.
I'm like, what? And they go, what they do is they purposely underreport so that their growth figures in the future can be better. And I'm thinking to myself, again, I just don't understand the logic of this. They're going to underreport. So if they underreport and they have been underreporting, why is stuff looking so bad now? Because if they've underreported in the past, you can make things look better now, right? So This logic, two issues this morning that I was like, I just don't understand. Anyway, I provided you a chart to look at of the Shanghai Index. And if you take a look at this, it starting in 2015, it took just a launch higher into, we'll call it April, May. It was up about 66% in that period of time. And all the time.
It shot up from like 450 to 700, bing.
Yep.
And actually, the baseline was down at less than about 300.
What was interesting was that all this time, as it was moving higher, it was on very poor news. Every time there was bad news, it would move even higher. And the government would be behind and all that. Now, remember something. They're persecuting short sellers these days. They're closing down the...
That's what's causing the downturn.
They're closing down access to several of the big hedge funds. Futures trading volume has dropped 99% since about May.
Since it was made illegal?
Essentially made illegal. What's interesting about that is they were the second largest futures market in the world. Their futures just dried up.
Huh.
And now we have a downturn from the high in June, about 44%.
Yeah.
And it looks like if we break the bottom here, it's going to be getting very ugly.
Drop from 700 to like 398, six.
Yep. Pretty ugly. We'll be watching what happens here. All right. Moving along. Any comments on the whole Syrian exodus? You want to talk about that, or is that maybe...
I don't know that we need to talk about it. It's definitely it's going to have some long-term implications and effect on European markets. I don't have any insight into it. What is going to...
I mean, 800,000 potential refugees arriving in Germany. Now, if I was going there, by the way, if I was a refugee and I was going through and making my choices, which particular... I'm already schlepping and traveling. I don't think Germany would be the place I'd stop.
Yeah, but Germany's welcoming them.
Well, these days, I think there's some border, a lot of countries, and including...
Well, they have to get through these other countries to get to Germany. This is kind of the problem. That's what the problem is that, you know, Hungary won't let them through because it's their pain in the ass, because a whole bunch of... You're letting 800,000 people walk down through the country. They make a mess.
Right.
And
and they have no money, so they're not like stopping in the stores and buying
a... Well, a lot of them do have some money, but they don't have enough money, obviously, to buy a plane ticket to get there. And Germany's welcoming them. They're going to put up some buildings, and it's like a system. The Germans, I guess, need these workers. And I don't know. It's going to have some effect on the European markets. I don't know what, though.
What's interesting is that we seem, as in the United States, to get our noses in everything, don't we?
But that's our job.
But we don't seem to be getting our noses really involved in this, even as it is so bad. The human suffering is so bad, and what's going on there, and the murder, and the mass murders going on there, that there is such an incredible movement and migration out of the country that... We're just like standing by doing nothing. I don't know why we don't go in there and just sweep the place.
Not our problem.
We draw the line.
We're selective. We're selective about what's not our problem.
Wasn't Syria the place that we had the line? Didn't Obama draw
the
line?
Red line in the sand.
Yeah, and they crossed it several times, and we, I guess, don't do anything. I'm telling Daddy.
Not our problem.
Yep, it seems that way. Well, and
I think at some level the culture kind of relishes seeing Europe have to deal with this. Because they're big talkers about, we're this, we're that.
800,000.
Well, that's just the one. That's just one small piece.
Mm-hmm. So the guys that are very wealthy, rich, crazy rich, I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, the Elon Buffett. Musk, the Jeff Bezos. So is this the new thing that these guys are playing adult child games as adults? So now it seems that Jeff Bezos has now announced plans to launch a rocket.
20 years ago, I wrote about this. I think I've written about it a couple of times. I first noticed this. I can't remember the guy's name. This is way back in the Apple II, Apple pre-Macintosh era. The guy who was the CEO, original, one of the first CEOs of Apple. I just can't remember his name, but he had a yacht. And he decided that he was going to get into rocketeering. And he wanted to start a rocket company up after he quit Apple. And he went and he tried to shoot a couple of rockets off the back of his boat. It was just a disaster. I lost all his money, at least all his rocket money. I've noticed a couple of other guys.
Was it Michael Scott?
Yeah, it was Michael Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Scott tried to become a rocket guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I noticed a couple of these guys, they get a bunch of money from, you know, technology in some way, shape, or form, and then they immediately start an aviation company. One of the guy, I can't remember his first name, Herrick. I always known him as Herrick. He ran one of these, one of these computer companies, made a whole number of millions of dollars. And now I think he owns the single largest fleet of Ford Tri-Motors. He decided to start collecting them.
Hmm.
Like, you know, like collecting toy cars, only he's collecting Tri-Motors, which are these, you know, crazy looking airplanes from the 30s. Or 20s, I guess. They're very old. And then Vern Rayburn out of Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
a fairly famous guy. I think went from IBM to Microsoft. So I don't know his history to be exact, but he decided he started collecting airplanes. Same kind of thing. And he owns a Connie. He owns an old, you know, one of those TWA constellations, the big four.
Oh yeah.
With the tail, the triple thing on the tail, there's three mm-hmm. things, three rudders.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, I've noticed this from the beginning. These guys get kind of nutty, and they all gravitate toward aviation and rockets. Mm. And so why should Bezos be any different? He's been into the rocket thing for quite a while, actually. If you look around and find some photos, some old JPEGs, you'll find one of these rockets that he had designed and he tried to launch. Looks like a big giant. It's a big piece of crap. Big giant wide body thing, short and stubby with very little bitty fins. And it doesn't look like it looks like a joke. But so, yeah.
As kids, we were all making paper airplanes with all those crazy designs.
Yeah.
This is kind of the rich boy play for the same thing.
My daughter learned to make one. She found what she claims at the time is, I guess there was some competition, the one great airplane, the paper airplane design, which mm-hmm. she can do. The thing is dynamite.
I can't make one. Mine just go flat. This will
go for miles.
it requires a particular fold. And once you get that fold down, you're in great shape.
Yeah.
Speaking about airlines, you know, there's a lot of controversy in this whole United Airlines area. The chief executive he resigned or stepped down, maybe fired, but stepped down, I guess, due to a federal corruption probe. Something about, it was an official in, I want to say New Jersey.
No, Chicago.
Chicago, there you go, that's why. There's an official in Chicago. I guess what happened was that there was a deal made that they could open up, United was going to open up terminal there, and then somehow immediately in somewhere, I think North Carolina, where this other guy had a house, there was something going on there. There was all of a sudden this crazy flights going on there. Anyway, weird stuff. He's leaving. He's going to raise $21 million in cash and stock and the ability to fly free for the rest of his life and keep his company car.
Well, the company car, does he get to renew the company car?
That's the least of the issues. You got $21 million.
Yeah, okay? $21 million plus free.
He can buy another car.
United forever.
Right.
That's a hell of a good deal.
Right. Federal corruption probe.
Today's CEOs are that was the right way to go.
Oh, that is the, I mean, what do you want to do? I want to be a CEO. I mean, not, you don't want to be a doctor. You don't want to be a lawyer. You know what I mean? You don't want to be president. You want to be a CEO.
Yeah.
Pretty much you're untouchable. And this is not really a big deal, this next story, but I thought it was interesting that GE will move about 500 U.S. jobs overseas to avoid losing business to foreign rivals because there was some kind of a lapse of the U.S., you know, this whole U.S. export-import bank thing that didn't go through. And I guess, you know, there was this money that was being paid to these companies, or at least benefits or for these companies from this U.S. export-import, you know, like a subsidy. And I guess that 500 whopping jobs going overseas.
Ah, Trump will be all over that.
Yeah. Oh, Trump. Did you watch Jimmy Fallon and Trump?
Yeah, I did, as a matter of fact.
That's pretty funny.
Trump puts up with a lot.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Well, it's good. Because
you have to give him credit for that. I mean, I don't think he still don't think, I theorize that he doesn't really have a prayer of getting in because they're all against him. But he's looking around. He's seeing what's what and he puts up with all of it.
That Trump and the neurosurgeon are leading the pack is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, Trump is actually someone who could maybe even do the job since he's a kind of a CEO type. The neurosurgeon is just, to me, is a baffling. The guy is boring. I got nothing against him. If I was going to have a brain operated on, he'd probably be the guy that you'd want.
Okay.
But smart guy, extremely dull.
Yeah.
And he's got no experience in government whatsoever. And government is not business, and it's definitely not a doctor's office.
Yeah. But what is so appealing?
I don't know what's so... Well, I don't know what's so appealing, to be honest. I've listened to him talk. He's got a good pitch. He's talks a little too slow for me. His pitch is good. He's smart. And I guess he's, you know, honest. I guess he's another honest. I think that's why they like Trump, because he just says what he thinks.
Mm. Yeah, Trump's pretty funny. At least he's making this whole thing lively.
If it wasn't for Trump, this would be really dull.
Yeah, really dull. Yep. Well, Taco Bell is going to be opening a location that serves wine, beer, sangria, and frozen mixed drinks in Chicago.
It's called a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Marking the first time the chain will serve alcohol in the United States. Have you ever noticed when you pass a Taco Bell that they have a new menu item every week?
Who buys those things?
I'm just saying, if you go into new chalupa or something, a new tacorita, I mean, every week they have something brand new. It's like these guys are just working overtime. And you got to wonder, what kind of equipment do they have to bring in to change and the constant training? I wouldn't want to work for Taco Bell. At least McDonald's, they don't change the menu. You know, you got to flip the hamburger, put it on the bun, throw a little special sauce, and it's done. Taco Bell, it's like, all right, what am I doing? Am I wrapping? Am I rolling? Am I putting it in a salad? Am I putting it with chips? What's happening?
Maybe it keeps the employees interested.
I guess
it's a challenging job.
I think what it does is it brings people in to, you know, because they're like, okay, I can't eat the crap they're serving. Oh, something new. I'll try that.
It's always made with the same ingredients. That crazy meat that nobody knows what's in it. And beans.
Yep.
And sour cream and some sauces. What else did they put in this food? I don't know that there's anything besides the beans and the meat.
No, and cheese. It's like, you know.
Oh, and cheese. Yeah, the little. I don't know how. I would like to know what equipment. None of you ever eaten a Taco Bell. But if you buy a taco, which is what you'd think they would be selling mostly, they have this shredded cheese.
Yeah.
That is, I don't know how you can shred this cheese to be that thin. It's like hair thin.
Yeah.
It's just the thinnest cheese. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know. I don't know. I have microplaners. I could never, I have no way of seeing how that cheese can be copied.
Then you know, this is the kind of thing that the creativity of it. You know, they have a burrito. It's like, we're going to have the new, improved, upside down burrito. You know, that it's because you said it's the same ingredients, just put into a different container in a different direction. New hard-shelled burrito. New soft-shelled burrito with onions. You know, whatever. They call it the spicy burrito. New sriracha burrito. Anyway.
Sriracha.
Now, FedEx said today, which I find this unbelievable, that they're going to be hiking the shipping rate starting at the beginning of 2016. Effective January 4th,
The company, have you seen these rates?
Oh, my God. I do everything not to send something FedEx.
Yeah, I use the post office. I think that box they've got, just you can stuff as much stuff you want into it, as long as it fits in the box, that is, which is a nice rate. Again, a nice little box. Everything, yeah, I think the most expensive priority mail, or least expensive, like that would cost you $25 on FedEx is like $5 at the post office.
Right.
Why would I use FedEx?
Now, the FedEx Express, FedEx Ground, FedEx Home Delivery, and FedEx Freight will rise an average of 5%. FedEx said it also will be increasing the surcharge on packages that exceed a maximum dimension effective November 2nd. Now, here's what's fascinating. They're getting an incredible discount on the price of fuel. And the surcharges for fuel don't go down very much. And when they do go down, by the way, they seem to lose money, which I never really understand how that works. You know, they're charging a surcharge because fuel prices are higher. When fuel prices come down, they charge less of a surcharge. So therefore, they make less money. But why do they make less money? Because fuel charges came down. The net is better to them. If you always just keep the surcharge a little bit ahead of the actual cost, which would seem like a logical thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But no. And they're going to be increasing it by 5%. What? That's a big increase, by the way. We're not talking about, you know, you're talking about $15 package and then multiply it out. Why are they raising the rates five? And this is not the first time. They raise it often. 5% with fuel prices being as low as they are. Can you imagine if fuel prices were $75 or $80? And it would seem to me that after a while, people would say, I can't do this anymore. This is stupid.
That's what I've done. I've stopped using FedEx almost entirely.
Mm. Amazing. But they got the market. Before we get to the stocks and all that, do you want to hear about my crazy Tiki Hut story or not?
I'd love to hear about your crazy Tiki Hut story.
So I put up a Tiki Hut in my house. Okay. These things are...
I don't know what you're talking about for beginnings.
I put up a
Tiki Hut.
You know what Tiki Hut is?
It's a little like a bar that you can put in a party area in your backyard.
Yeah, it has the thatched roof. It has the pole.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Well, mine's 24 feet long.
You have a 24-foot, it's like a longhouse.
Yeah, exactly. And it's about a 14.5-foot or 14-foot ceiling because I made it as a cooking.
It's in the house?
No, it's outside.
Okay.
In my backyard because there was no shade back there. And yeah, it's about a 14-foot or 13-foot, whatever the ceiling is, opens on both sides. So I have a barbecue in there and it creates a draft so it moves out, okay? Well,
yeah, it's great.
Meanwhile, it seems that...
you have pictures posted?
I don't, but I could. I will put them up.
I do that. Everyone wants to see them.
What's interesting, speaking of pictures, is that Broward County, where I live, it seems the property appraiser decided in their downtime that they're going to start just flipping through comparisons of 2014, 2015 of aerial photography of the various houses around. And they said, oh, look at this. This guy, when I got this new house, put a major deck in the back. I put a whole travertine deck in the back, right? Raised it all up, leveled it off. And he has a structure, this Tiki Hut, in the backyard. Sent it over to an inspector in Broward County, and they started looking at it. And they said, you know what? While a Tiki Hut, this is interesting, a Tiki Hut does not require a permit to be put up because it's put up by the Seminole Indians, and it's exempt from permitting, which is interesting.
The Tiki Hut is put up by Seminole Indians?
Yeah.
Because Tiki is somehow connected to the Southern Florida Indian tribe?
Yeah, no, really.
It actually comes from Tahiti?
If you put up a tiki and you want it to be a quote-unquote permit, non-permit required, you have to have it put up by the Seminole or the Mississippi Indians.
This is Florida.
Yeah. So now, they said, but the problem is you have to obey the setback rules, and it requires that you have 10 feet from the water, the canal that I'm on, the water face, to the Tiki Hut where it overhangs. And from our measurements, you're not there. You're much longer. I have like 3 or 4 feet.
You're 3 or 4 feet too close to the water?
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
These are the rules. So now what do I got to do? So I hired these attorneys, and I hired it's a very strange reason why, but they knew a lot of people on the board. They have a lot of experience with this. And I said, okay, I'll hire you. I went around the neighborhood. I got all my neighbors on the canal. Anybody that has any possible viewing of this particular Tiki Hut, I had them all sign letters in approving and agreeing.
You just seem to have nothing but problems.
Yeah, it gets worse. So now, long story short, after all this stuff goes in, and it's costing me like $5,000 in attorney fees, okay? All right? So now we get to the meeting. and a few things happen. And they tell me that it's very difficult to get a variance, if almost impossible to get a variance, okay? But I'm saying plow ahead. I have faith. So two objection letters come in because I have to post these signs saying that there's going to be a meeting of the town variance committee or the city committees. And if anybody has any objection to the tiki, please let your information be known. Two letters come in. One from a guy across the street to the left a little bit on the other side, not on the canal side. Just a miserable old bastard who's like, you know, he's been doing all this work on his house and, you know, improving it and this and that. And I think that he should have gotten permits and all this ahead of time. I'm thinking, what an idiot. I'm doing the improvements and stuff like that, making his house worth more money. And okay, fine, just whatever. The other one that came in, though, is from a guy about a mile and a half away. Mile and a half away. He writes, a few friends of mine and I were taking in the neighborhood the other night. And we walked past and saw the sign and looked at the tiki, went to the end of the canal and looked at the tiki hut. But by the way, there is no way to see my tiki hut unless you're in my backyard, in somebody else's backyard or something like that. You can't just see it from the street anywhere. Or it's not possible. And he says, it's too big and it obstructs the view of the neighbor to his south, which, by the way, that neighbor came to the meeting in support of the tiki hut. And one of my neighbors tell me that the owner is an attorney who is admitted to the Florida bar and he should know better. I strongly object to giving him the variance on the tiki. What kind of people are out there? What?
Well, the first thing you should do, of course.
Shit on his lawn.
After that, the first thing you should do is you take one of your little cameras or your phone and you start a recording of where this guy claims to have seen that in live action and where he claims to have seen the tiki hut, like you said, you can't. And you show it on the film, and then you show that to the variance committee.
Let me give you the punchline.
Yeah?
The variance committee unanimously approved the variance.
Oh, okay. Well, then you don't have to do that.
Yeah. But I just thought, I was surprised when
you were just stunned by the locals who were just objecting for no good reason.
The guy across the street, okay, I'll go with that, whatever. Not one of the people on the canal and one of the people next door who is the house that I would have blocked if it was a problem spoke on my behalf, and everybody else sent letters. The one that got me was the guy that lives a mile and a half away.
Yeah.
With the commentary that he believes that somebody told him that I'm an attorney that's admitted to the Florida bar.
And you should know better. I mean, welcome to the internet age.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'll put up a picture with this particular episode. We'll put it
on. So your tiki hut's good to go.
Good to go. Yes. I have a couple permit issues with electrical. But thank goodness my tiki hut is good to go. Got the approval.
Well, those aren't the kind of problems we have here in California.
No. Nope. You have other things. You have wildfires and you have water shortages.
Well, the water shortages, I'm telling you, is going to end and in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here long enough to know what the cycles look like. And this particular El Nino winter is going to be, it's just going to really be bad. This is going to be you said the fires, you're going to hear about these stories. Oh, another five houses slid down the hill.
Oh, those are terrible. Oh, that's awful.
And that's going to happen like crazy. We haven't had that for a number of years, but I remember they come in bunches. And the Oakland Hills are particularly vulnerable to these slides. Mm. And then mud. Mm. You know, mud comes down the hill and
Well, let's get to the stocks and talk about some of the things that are going on. Why don't you do a quick explanation of some of the new things that are going on with the spreadsheet with our stocks and our stock picks. And I'll mention that it's just a game that we play. It's not an offer to buy or sell any security. Use a professional financial advisor to help you with any of this. It's very risky business investing in stocks. And, of course, John C. DeVark, myself, or Horowitz Company may own any of the positions, and we'll duly note that.
Well, what happened, of course, is during the whiplash moment.
Wait, before you do that, the other thing.
Oh, we're going to see this spreadsheet, we're going to require you to register.
I think that's fair.
It's just an email registration. It's no big deal. You don't have to give your anything.
No credit card?
Although it'd be cool if we had a survey that you had to fill out that would tell how much that you made or, you know, stuff like that. But no.
Credit cards? No credit cards.
Definitely no credit.
No direct links to Venmo or anything like that. No. Okay. So it'll be a name. It'll be a name and a phone.
That way, when we finally figure out some way to monetize this fine show,
yeah,
we actually have a few people that we can ask.
Yeah.
So because you'll be part of the show.
Yeah. So we'll ask for your name and
just your email address.
Email, and we'll do a double opt-in. So we'll make sure that you don't give us a fake and phony one. Right.
Yeah, you have to. You right. You get a you get a little email. You get a thing to confirm.
Yeah,
it's the way it works with MailChimp.
Yep,
MailChimp. I want to mention this to people who are subscribing to this or that, and they never get the newsletter. MailChimp has an algorithm that looks for people who have that use fake. I mean, it's a real email address. It might go to your box possibly, but it's like PayPal or PayPal, no agenda at, you know, whatever, at Gmail. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, these crazy ones that are just used so you can code your name.
Yeah.
PayPal, for some reason, thinks that's bad. And so they don't let you do it.
Mm.
So if you have something, you know, typically if your name is PayPal,
yeah,
you know, at Dvorak.org, you won't be able to, can't subscribe to anything. So here we, so anyway, we got whipsawed out. So most of our stocks have been reset. And so here we are. We're back with a new list of only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 stocks. Mm-hmm. You're adding an ETF, apparently.
Going back to this one.
And I am going to go back and re-up on SGEN.
Really? Ah, nice.
Which I was bounced out of. I had a profit of 25%.
Mm-hmm.
It was 37, and then at 47, I got kicked out, I guess, because it went down a few points. So because we're seeing a lot of it, more insider buying at SGEN, so I'm going to get back in. I might even buy some.
All right,
and
now.
That's the only stock I have.
So we were actually, you know what, a day after, or maybe 2 days after, Shake Shack started getting in the money when I shorted it last week. There was an upgrade. The upgrade to the stock by some third tier firm to a market perform. So if you think about the range of potential upgrades, mm-hmm. maybe like strong buy list, conviction. No, a market perform. And Shake Shack went up 15% on that.
Wow. Well, I think you're still in good shape.
Well, it's stopped.
Oh, you got stopped out?
Yeah, got stopped out that day, but only with a 5% loss because it was up 5% or so.
Oh, okay.
Uvixie was also stopped out. Too bad. And that thing moves pretty wildly. But look at it, down 20% today. Remember, I was short that. It closed today at 49 and change. I got stopped out at 67 for a 12.5% gain.
Yeah, that was one, you know, that was a, yeah. I was actually, yeah, good.
That was good. I mean, just had to have a good little work. Bit more you muster on that. I would actually like to go the other way. Considering the potential for some volatility coming up and you know, some of the market moves, this one day up, one day down thing. But what I'm going to do is, in light of the fact that there is the potential for a very significant move in a variety of assets after the Fed, and if in fact all consensus is correct in that there is going to be no rise in rates, at least at this point,
uh-huh.
the potential is that you would see the dollar move down, right? If that's the case, maybe we would see gold move up. And if it does, the gold miners could do very well. Now, if you look at the shares of this, this is pretty unbelievable. We should probably just mention, this is at $2.66. I think I remember when this was 30 not too long ago. This is the three
NUGT nugget.
Yeah, this is the three times long gold miners. It's the three times.
Yeah, GDX. This thing is definitely going to take off someday.
Yeah, someday. It may be from a dollar base or a $2 base, but you know, these things do degrade naturally, and this is always an issue when you go with the 2 and 3 timers. You could hold them for a period of time, but not forever, because just a zero return on it, on the underlying.
Yeah,
essentially. You have to pay fees on, and there's degradation to the deal anyway.
I kind of like the chart for gold.
Yeah, so if you like the chart, this will pop much more.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
I was thinking about Freeport again, too. You know, if in fact the dollar does, one of the big things with commodities is that the dollar has been very strong, or at least strengthening and rallying for some time. The other problem for commodities has been, of course, that you have China slowing down. So that's not doing well. But Freeport,
I think that's the real key problem.
Yeah, it is. So that's why I took gold instead of copper, because the Freeport has copper in it.
Right, Freeport mostly copper.
So I would have hit Sun Edison again too, but I want to keep it easy right now. So this
we got to find something new.
Yeah, well, some of the old stuff is pretty good.
Yeah, I know.
Twitter's an interesting thing to buy, even though, you know, because supposedly they're going to have a CEO or something go on one of these days. I mean, there's got to be some news in there that pops the stock one way or the other. Terrible. But I mean, there's you know, we have earnings season coming up. It's coming up in the future, but not too far away. There'll be plenty of opportunity to find stuff at that point. I mean, but right now, kind of, I think better to keep the powder dry a little bit with all that's going on in front of the Fed and all that.
Yeah, well, I'll just think it with the Seattle Genetics, which seems to be, it just looks like a winner for some reason. It's all insider stuff.
All of this will be, all these names are on the spreadsheet that will be over on DH Unplugged. I'll also put a picture of my tiki hut on the show notes, as well as some of the charts that we talked about today. And make sure to visit DH Unplugged. Also, if you want to follow John C. Dvorak at The Real Dvorak on Twitter, myself, Andrew Horowitz. And of course, listen to the No Agenda Show 2 times a week. Great information, really the truth and the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Is Adam still broadcasting from his Airstream?
No, he came back and we did a couple shows in his Texas place. And now he's leaving Friday on the Airstream on a serious trip.
Yeah, where's he going?
Straight up into Yellowstone.
Oh, really? Wow. And he broadcasts from the Airstream?
Yeah.
Does he have Wi-Fi? How does he do?
You know, he's got a studio in there, and he's got some gear that gives him LTE connectivity, 4G connectivity, so he can do it over that system. Or if there is a local Wi-Fi provider, depends on where he is. This is a crapshoot, but he's done this before, and he's been very successful at it.
And he sleeps in the Airstream?
It's a beauty. It's like a 27-footer. It's a big one.
Wow. He's a fun guy. I met him up in London a number of years ago, and we spent some time, but I don't think I've seen him. I've talked to him, but we all should. You know what? We should all meet in Austin for some barbecue.
Yeah, I'm always game, as everyone knows, to go to Austin.
Yeah, I haven't been there. When's the last time you were there?
About 5 years, six years ago.
I think we should do that. Maybe when he comes back, we'll take a ride to Austin.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
All right. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.